welcome back. Coming up on this week's show, we discuss our thoughts on the expanded Leagues Cup. NBC bounces back with stronger than ever Premier League coverage. Serie B finds a home in the US. Is a World Cup every 2 years a foregone conclusion? And your feedback in the listener mailbag segment. I'm Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, joined alongside co-host Kartik Krishnayar and Kyle Fansler. Now, Kartik and Kyle, we've had you on separately in the last couple of weeks, but this is the first time actually the three of us have been able to actually meet up and talk at the same time. So welcome aboard. Yeah, and for those listeners who don't know, Kyle is the newest member of the World Soccer Talk team. If you go to worldsoccertalk.com, you see many of his articles and a whole new series of original articles that he's been copy editing, as well as video. If we get a chance a little bit later, we'll talk more about video. And in Kartik, man, this is kind of the calm before the storm when we're recording this podcast. So it's Thursday we're recording it. Last week we discussed the Premier League. We're going to have some meetings this week. This week, what we found out is they met in London. The chairman of all our chair people of the different clubs in the Premier League met in London at a swanky hotel, the Landmark Hotel, deep in the heart of London. And usually what happens with these types of meetings is that, you know, there's an agenda, of course, and then they'll talk about the matters at hand, one of which is the U.S. rights to the Premier League. And they'll talk about the opening bids and who's bidding from the United States. What often happens, though, is it goes through several rounds of bidding. So you'll have the opening bids, and then they'll narrow it down to maybe the selective bids. And at that point, it's a closed bidding situation. CBS Sports does not know how much NBC Sports is bidding, and so on and so forth, until ultimately the Premier League makes a decision. And even when they make a decision, it sometimes will take a few days to go through lawyers and the legal paperwork before they actually make it official. So here we are Thursday. We're not expecting anything this week, but stay tuned either the next week or two for a big announcement about the Premier League rights for the 2022-23 season and for the next 6 years and who that'll go to. Last week's podcast, I think Kartik, you and I were pretty much thinking that, I don't know, I think we were leaning towards ESPN. Have your bets changed at all in a week?
I guess the people I talk to around the broadcast industry all seem to think CBS has the best shot to take the rights from NBC. If someone does, in fact, take it from NBC, there is, as we talked about last week on the podcast, a certain degree of concern among people in the industry whether NBC is willing to pay $2 billion for 6 years for Premier League rights in the U.S., and that there seems to be a pulling back from sports once again, which we've seen previously from NBC, as I've talked about repeatedly on this podcast, except that was when NBC was owned by General Electric. Now, Comcast, you would think, is more invested in live programming and streaming, although, again, they're primarily a cable provider, right? So that's where the conflict comes in with streaming. I don't know. I still think NBC has an edge. CBS, definitely. If CBS can take this, they become the primary player in soccer rights very, very quickly in this country, 3 years after not having any broadcast rights at all in the sport. And this just reminds us that when you have these 3 and 6 year deals, rather than the long 10 and 15 year deals that we're seeing, particularly from college sports in the United States, that this situation can turn around on a dime. Remember, Chris, it wasn't long ago we were talking about ESPN being completely out of the club game outside of MLS. Mm-hmm. And then you have Serie A 3 years right cycle, Bundesliga flips, and La Liga flips. So now they've lost Serie A, so that they've gone through a cycle of that. But there is an ability to pick up rights quickly in this sport that there probably isn't in other sports. And CBS, under their Sean McManus and their other leadership, see the opportunity. So I think they have a good shot.
Yeah, we'll get more into that a little bit later as far as some of the other players that might be interested, other than just CBS and ESPN. But before we go there, let's talk about some of the things we've been watching from this past week. and from the world of football. And I know, Kyle, I know last weekend you were definitely occupied with the Alabama-Florida game, the college football game. But beyond that, though, you mean PSG. PSG is an interesting story. I mean, for me personally, I probably watched more Ligue 1 this season than I have in several years. It is a really good league. Some really good teams, some great talents coming through, often going to much bigger clubs, Real Madrid, Arsenal, etc. But for you, Kyle, what are your thoughts about PSG, and can they make the addition of Messi work in the system or not?
Yeah, first off, I want to say thanks for talking about the Florida football game, even though they did lose. That was a very fun game to be at. But yeah, you talk about Ligue 1, how it's gotten a lot better. You know, Lyon obviously going to the Champions League semis 2 years ago, PSG to the final 2 years ago, and always to making a deep run in the competition, relatively speaking. But everyone expected PSG to add Messi on and come out shooting out of the gate. But they go up against Club Brugge in the Champions League, and you could really make the case that they were outplayed by a Belgian side. And that's no slight to Club Brugge. It's just PSG looked, in my opinion, from watching the game, pretty dreadful. And I'm a pretty big Messi supporter. I think he's, in my opinion, the greatest of all time, but he just doesn't look the same way he did for Barcelona. And I think that he's trying to bring that style of game to PSG. And what they've done over the last couple of years is obviously successful. You know, how many Ligue 1s have they won? How many French Cups have they won? And he's trying to bring that style from Barcelona to PSG, and they don't really play the same game, I think it's pretty safe to say. I think that they will sort it out. I think that's a big responsibility of Mauricio Pochettino. I mean, you already see the conflict starting to rise up between him and Messi. They're not shaking hands as he subs Messi off in a Ligue 1 game. I do think they'll figure it out. I think it's honestly hard to not figure it out when you got Neymar, Mbappe, and Messi occupying your front three, and then they have one of the best defensive combos and goalie combos in the world. So I think it's just a matter of time, but, you know, really they should figure it out sooner rather than later, because you could argue Club Brugge is going to be their easiest Champions League opponent. It's not an easy group that they have there with Man City coming up next. And who knows, maybe Messi missing a couple games with an injury gives him the right state of mind and kind of allows the rest of the team to figure out how to work, and then once Messi does come back, they'll have a formula ready for him.
It's interesting, too, watching that PSG-Mets game midweek, I think on Wednesday, the way that PSG plays without Messi, I mean, Messi injured, I mean, not able to play, but the way that Neymar plays in this team, he plays as a number 10. He's the creator, he's the one that's doing the through balls or the crosses into Mbappe, and Mbappe, you mean kind of knocking them in from there. So when you have Messi playing kind of in the middle, and then you got whether it's Neymar playing out wide, or it does. I mean, that's the thing about soccer. No matter what team it is, or no matter what national team it is, so much of it is built on team chemistry and how players link together and play together. It's not an individual sport. So when you do have a dream team of players playing together, it does affect the result. It does affect the way that they play. It'll be interesting. I mean, and actually PSG has had difficult times against what you could say is weaker opponents, whether it's Mets or Clermont or others. It'll be interesting to see how they do against a Lyon. You mean? Well, actually, well, yeah, they've done that. But you mean? I don't know. I think this is going to be an interesting story to watch over the course of the season. And I think it is in many ways one of the stories to watch. I mean, and it actually pulls people into Ligue 1. Kartik, what about you? Have you been watching much Ligue 1 this season?
Not really. I mean, I've tried to keep track of both Monroe and Lille, who've gotten off to poor starts, although Lille did get an important victory yesterday, but have not watched as much as the league as I like. Have gone back and watched all the review shows on VN Sport Connect, so I feel like I'm up with the league, but not really watching many live matches because of the conflicts with other leagues or other things in life going on.
Yeah, let's switch gears slightly just before we get to the Premier League and talk about La Liga. La Liga, I think, is an interesting story as far as the coverage this season. Anyone who's watched the English language coverage of La Liga on ESPN Plus, I mean, to me, I've been blown away by the amount of focus that they've had on this league. So I've seen Dan Thomas more than ever in terms of pre-game, halftime, post-match, in addition to his ESPN FC responsibilities. I've seen so much talent involved in those pre-match, halftime, post-match. I've seen Sid Lowe on the pitch side. I've seen Alexis Nunes, same thing too, pitch side at Camp Nou. In addition to that, you've got Luis Garcia providing analysis. You've got a weekly show with Kay Murray about La Liga. You've got Derek Ray doing commentary. You've got Maka and Ian Dark doing commentary from Camp Nou. The amount of effort that ESPN has put into really broadcasting La Liga is something we haven't seen before. They're doing more for La Liga than they did for the Bundesliga. And then on the Spanish language side, it's interesting because I think in many ways that's their focus, where they're trying to, one of the reasons why they got La Liga was really to kind of tap into the Spanish language audience in the US and get that audience subscribing to ESPN Plus. And I think it's been a little bit rough, a little bit bumpy so far. And we're starting to see some of the games from La Liga shown on ESPN Deportes, which wasn't part of the original plan. So it looks like maybe like one game a week. It's not your ultimate game, but it looks like they're trying to a strategy of having some of those games on television to try to talk about ESPN Plus and say, hey, here's the reasons why La Liga lives on ESPN Plus. El Clasico lives on ESPN Plus, and try that method. Kartik, from what you've seen so far, do you think it's working on the English language side and in the Spanish language side?
Whether it's working to draw new fans to the league or not, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of promotion for La Liga, even during college football games on ESPN networks. But by the way, they did with the Bundesliga last year. I mean, in fact, Serie A fans were complaining a year ago at this time, why has ESPN not shown this level of commitment to Serie A, where they're mainstreaming the Bundesliga, they're featuring it on SportsCenter, they're advertising for it during college football games, etc. Now we see the same thing with La Liga. I think their studio coverage has been impressive. Their use of talent, Alexis Nunez, Luis Garcia, etc., has Kay Murray has been very impressive. I do, however, think that it's the timing with Messi leaving the league. Quite honestly, very little star power, relatively speaking, to the past on Real Madrid and Barcelona. Atleti being kind of a clunky watch always. I think both Sevilla and Valencia. Valencia's hot and cold, right? They're going back 20 years now since Rafa Benitez left. But Sevilla could push for the title this season, is my opinion. But it's the timing, right? I mean, we're entering an era, probably a Premier League hegemony, and maybe that actually started last season with an all Premier League final in the Champions League. And I just feel like they would be able to drive more viewers on the English language side to La Liga if they had gotten this deal 3 years earlier. But now I think it's just bad timing. As far as the Spanish language side, that's interesting. I think that's going to help get signups on the Spanish language side for ESPN Plus. In fact, they're highlighting even the Bundesliga Spanish language telecast now. If you go onto the ESPN Plus app, they're really trying to promote those as well. However, I think, again, with a lot of the Spanish language audience, Chris, now you have the option of watching South American leagues in English on Paramount Plus, in addition to what they always have had through recently through Fanatis, Fubo, etc. And then just talking to Latinos that I know around football that work in and around the game, there seems to be even among them more of an emphasis on the Premier League now than there was, let's say, 3 or 4 years ago, just because they see the number of players they're familiar with or the number of players they like going to that league. So, again, the timing might be all wrong.
Yeah, the timing is key, definitely. And Kyle, I mean, you're a Barcelona fan. I mean, what about the Barcelona story about, you mean, the way that they're playing on the pitch? I mean, how does that feel as a Barcelona supporter, like watching that?
Yeah, on the topic of timing, it seems like, you know, at first glance, ESPN may have gotten it all wrong. I mean, Messi's gone. Barcelona's probably in their worst state and got to be before the Frank Rijkaard era. So maybe 20 years, maybe more. But I think ESPN, what they've done with La Liga is pretty impressive considering all of that. I think that they're really making that hard investment. We know that broadcast and the live broadcast from Spain, I know they made a big deal about how the crews and the studios going out to Camp Nou in Barcelona was the first time that's ever happened for a U.S.-based audience. And I think that their investment towards that, considering that, you know, all the other factors with Barcelona not being great, Real Madrid, like as Kartik said, the star power is not really there like it has been in the decade prior. I think that it's hard to say, obviously, because we don't know the exact viewership and we won't know that for a little bit. But I think what they're doing is honestly pretty impressive, just given the circumstances.
It is impressive, but again, going back to that timing that both you, Kartik, and Kyle mentioned, it is like the worst timing possible, because you look at the crowds, and you look at Camp Nou, you look at Real Madrid Stadium, Bernabeu, pardon me, and no matter where you see in La Liga, it's half empty stadiums because of strict COVID rules in those areas, and then you look at the Premier League. And it's full on, full capacity, fans chanting, singing, going crazy. And it does make a difference, I think, when you're watching a game from whether it's the Emirates or Etihad or Goodison or Anfield, you name it, wherever it is in England. To me, I'm drawn in by the fans singing and chanting and that, as well as the football, the soccer. And I think NBC's stronger than ever Premier League coverage in terms of what they're doing, Kartik. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think without question, you see the NBC stronger Premier League coverage this season. It has a lot to do, quite honestly, and I know a lot of listeners aren't going to want to hear this, with Peacock. And I think the flexibility Peacock, with the limited number of interruptions, no ads, etc., you can go to whatever time period, less rigid in terms of commercials, has given NBC. I think the studio programming has been better when it's on Peacock than when it's on NBCSN or on over-the-air NBC. One of the things that I've always complained about with NBC's Premier League coverage is that they load commercials up. Logically so, when you think about the construct of soccer as a television sport, in the pregame show, the postgame show, and at halftime, to where you would get very little out of the studio shows. That seems to be different now on Peacock. Plus, they've got Ronaldo, in my opinion, the greatest player of this generation, back in the Premier League. They've got compelling stories with Liverpool back with their full allotment of players. Harvey Elliott's now down, and he'll be out till January. I think with Liverpool, Chelsea, and Manchester United, you've got some great stories and eyeballs, those being three very, very popular teams in the U.S. Chelsea's touring of the U.S., and Chris, you and I have talked about this for years. Chelsea coming to the U.S. every year created a built-in fan base for them. In addition, Liverpool and Manchester United probably have the greatest support outside of Real Madrid and Barcelona in terms of English English language speaking fans in the U.S. Maybe they have more support. So when you talk about those three clubs potentially being competitors for a title, those three clubs, I think it's a great time for NBC. The one thing NBC has missed out on is Manchester United pushing for a title in the 9 years that they've had the rights. Sir Alex Ferguson left the summer before NBC took over the Premier League rights. And even though Manchester United has finished second twice in the league in that period, they have finished well behind Man City both those seasons. This year, they may genuinely be able to push for a title. And that's just a win for NBC in every way possible.
Yeah, I think in many ways, when I watch NBC so far this season, is that they seem more focused, like kind of laser focused on the analysis they're giving. So I think everyone from Rebecca Lowe, the two Robbies, etc., have kind of seemed to have stepped up, whether they're re-energized thinking that they may lose the rights to the Premier League and they want to kind of give their best showing. So even if, say worst case scenario, NBC Sports loses the rights to the Premier League, where does that leave the two Robbies? Where does that leave Rebecca Lowe? Do they start thinking, okay, whoever gets the rights for the next 6 years, maybe this season gives me that motivation, that incentive to go ahead and try my best, show how much I'm preparing for these games in terms of my analysis and the takes I'm sharing. I want to give the best representation of who I am, so that if CBS comes along and says, you know what, let's talk to Robbie Musto or Robbie Earle and say, hey, would you be interested in coming over to us with CBS Sports? I think that's definitely a possibility. And that's one of the reasons why I think that their analysis has been better. For me personally, Kartik, and Kyle too, Kyle, you may disagree on this one, but one of the reasons why I'm actually kind of been enjoying the Premier League coverage on NBC Sports a little bit more this season than in previous seasons is there's no men in blazers. So there's no corny cheese ball kind of like, okay, and now we're going to go off to men in blazers. And to me, which is completely unserious and completely, this is what they are, right? I mean, just kind of fun and just focusing on different things, whether it's memes or whatever. To me, it's more the serious coverage that we're getting from NBC Sports. And for me, without them being in the actual kind of on the platform, on the network, it actually makes me enjoy it better. Kartik and Kyle, so what about actually, Kyle, in terms of NBC's coverage of the Premier League, what were for you? I mean, who's kind of one of your favorites in terms of the analysis that they give or the information that they share?
Well, I got to be honest, I think one of my favorite people on NBC is just Rebecca Lowe. I had the privilege of talking to her, and she's just such a professional, and she seems like she knows exactly what she's talking about. And she's surrounded by these former players that they're going to have all the correct analysis and whatnot, and they're going to have the insight. But she seems like she's able to, you know, go off of them and talk off of them and contribute to what they're adding on. It's never just her asking them a question. It's never just her saying, oh, here's this person with analysis. She's able to provide some of that. And I think that I see a lot of people talking about it is whoever does get the next batch of Premier League rights, you know, it's pretty much a given that, you know, you think Rebecca Lowe has to travel with them because she's become such a staple of the Premier League coverage in the United States. And before I add anything else, I do want to say Men in Blazers, I think it is noticeable that their absence has changed the perception of Premier League coverage because, you know, sometimes you do need just different kinds of entertainment. In the past, it's been a two or three team race for a title, but I think a lot of it goes back to timing. This season, there are five teams that I think could legitimately challenge for a Premier League title, and they don't have, and NBC does not have to go out and make other kinds of entertainment because people that are watching their programs, they're just intrigued. They, you know, they see the storylines. I mean, look at West Ham, Manchester United the last weekend. That's a phenomenal game. And, you know, it seems like every single weekend there's another marquee matchup. You know, this week there's two, arguably Tottenham playing Arsenal. I mean, Arsenal's not really a Premier League challenger, but, you know, and then Chelsea playing, I believe it's Manchester City. I could be wrong on that one, but
no, that's right. Yep.
It seems like every week there's a marquee game, and it's not hard to make programming and coverage about marquee games. So, but going back to your point about who I think is great on NBC, my first thought and my best thought is probably Rebecca Lowe, just because she is such a phenomenal host.
Yeah, no, I agree there. I mean, and it's interesting too, because like, Carl, you interviewed Rebecca last week for a story that you're working on that's probably going to be out on worldsoccertalk.com in the next week or two. But Kartik, I mean, Carl mentions Rebecca Lowe, but who for you has been the standout star so far this season on NBC's coverage?
Tim Howard, hands down. I think he's been really on the money in a lot of his analysis, more analytical and tactical than the two Robbies. And in fact, I mean, that's Robbie Mosto has been in the past very, very analytical, but then at times, you know, also very kind of reflexive and I don't want to say reactionary, that's a strong word, but very dour and hyperbolic in some of his analysis. But he is he's actually having a good year. I think they're all having good years, but Tim Howard to me has raised his game to the top. He's making really astute tactical analysis, understanding kind of where there are issues at halftime and full time with team setups, what sort of changes need to be made in those teams. Now, this is the sort of analysis, quite honestly, we didn't get from NBC the last few years. I mean, we were, me especially, disappointed in their studio programming. I would say the last three seasons prior to this, and particularly last season with the absence of Kyle Martino, who I felt was the best of their studio pundits, ex-player pundits. So Tim Howard has really raised his game this season. I think the other thing we're recognizing is NBC now sees that they have to give some more detailed analysis, tactical analysis, some discussion of player psychology and mentality. Those sorts of things seem to be out the door the last few seasons, with the exception of when Danny Higginbotham came in last season and provided that. And he's top class, whether yep. he's a co-commentator or a studio pundit. My concern about NBC the last few seasons is their overemphasis on the big four or five clubs. I would even include that I felt like NBC was very and it's odd saying this because Arlo White's a Leicester fan, but he calls the matches very biased against Leicester City in terms of their push for the top four the last two seasons, where everything was about Chelsea and Manchester United. United, and then I guess Liverpool last season was competing with Leicester. Very little about Leicester. If Leicester had injuries, which they had a whole injury ward at the end of each of the last two seasons, I mean, incredible number of injuries. That wasn't talked about the same way that the one or two injuries Chelsea may have were talked about, or the one or two injuries Manchester United might have were talked about. So I want to see if there's more balance this season as it goes on. It's September. It's hard to make these judgments, but I think they've really improved thus far this season through the first 5 weeks.
All right. So we talked about the Premier League. We've talked about Ligue 1. We've talked about La Liga. Just one more thing I want to mention, and that's Serie A, and that's CBS's coverage of that league. Calcio e Cappuccino, which is their weekend show, which is... It's interesting to watch. If anyone hasn't had a chance to watch it yet, definitely check it out. It's a lot of pre-match build-up to the games. It's a lot of Italian-Americans on set talking about their love for that league, talking about the storylines, the talking points, the tactical analysis, etc. It's interesting because like, this is a person I know of as a player but have never seen on television. But Mike Grella, to me, is their standout star. He, watching it last week, had some really good tactical analysis. And what I found out later is that actually he was or is a scout for Major League Soccer. And that was really good. That was something I did not expect and was really impressed by. So if you haven't had a chance to watch Serie A much this season, definitely check out Calcio e Cappuccino, which is usually on Paramount Plus. All right, so matches to watch this weekend. For me, I'll go first. Chelsea against Man City. I mean, that, to me, is an intriguing match. Saturday, 7:30 a.m. Eastern time on NBCSN, which is at the same time as Man United against Aston Villa. The Villa-United match had to be moved because of, I think there was something going on, either a concert or something. But anyway, Chelsea against Man City Saturday. I mean, that's a perfect way to start the weekend, I think. Kyle, what about you? What's your pick for the weekend?
I was kind of scared to pick this game, but I did say it's Arsenal against Tottenham on Sunday at 11:30 on NBCSN. I'm daring to say it. I think Arsenal's on a decent run of form. I think it's four wins in their last five games, obviously. there was a 5-0 loss in there against Manchester City, but we won't talk about that one. But, you know, you can never go wrong with a North London derby. Tottenham, I think they're trying to bounce back after getting, in my opinion, demolished at the hands of Chelsea last weekend. So I think it's an important game, a good litmus test for both teams, especially for Arsenal, who's, you know, already trying to make that slow and that grinding climb out of the bottom half of the Premier League.
Yeah, and definitely a good win for them midweek in the League Cup. Kartik, what about you, Kartik? What's your pick?
I say Gladbach-Dortmund because there'll be a ton of goals in this match just from an entertainment standpoint. Dortmund can't defend. It doesn't matter who their manager is. Since Peter Bosz, or actually since the second year of Thomas Tuchel, their defending has been bad. So it's basically been five seasons in a row with one, two, three, four, five different managers, six managers actually. The defending continues to be bad under Marco Rosa, but this is him against his former side, and you're going to see, I think, a very, very open, entertaining match, 12:30 p.m. ESPN+.
Yeah, last weekend's goal by Erling Haaland, his last goal in that game was incredible. If you haven't seen it, definitely check that out. All right, moving on to TV streaming news. This is a story that Kyle wrote about, but Kartik, we'll have you talk about it because you have some additional insight into this one, which is an interesting story because it's a little bit different and not what we were expecting.
So in the interest of full disclosure, let me preface that that Hellbiz is the shirt sponsor for Miami FC, who I used to be the communications director for, and share some ownership, so I have some insight. Hellbiz Media has the rights to Serie B, and they have sold those rights in the United States to Fox. And so this gets Fox back into the European club game, albeit at the second division level in Italy. We don't know yet necessarily where these matches will air, whether it'll be potentially Tubi. Had a conversation with an industry analyst actually this morning as we record this on Thursday, who tells me that Fox is very happy with the performance of Tubi. They bought the streaming service about a year and a half ago. Did not expect such a return on their investment so quickly. And remember, Tubi is a free streaming service, which is completely supported by ad dollars, but that the ad dollars have been flowing in. And because there's such a library of, I guess, B-rate programming more than anything on Tubi, but stuff you can't find elsewhere, that it's actually been very, very useful and successful for Fox. And now we're going to see more live programming moved over there, and Fox sitcoms, et cetera. And that Fox has targeted that demographic, that 18 to 49-year-old demographic, and that Tubi as a streaming service is performing really well in that demographic as well. So that's where I guess some of these matches will end up, and I think we might see Fox reemerge as a player for more rights because they have a streaming service that right now is free, but they have the bandwidth on that streaming service to put properties someplace.
It'll be interesting too, because I mean, another ad supported free streaming platform is Pluto TV, which is owned by CBS. But if you take a look at kind of the streaming landscape, and you look at, I mean, in terms of when it comes to sports, and you look at or even entertainment, you look at ESPN Plus or Disney Plus near the top, with Paramount Plus and Peacock a little bit further down, and so on and so forth. And then kind of the bottom tier would be the Pluto TV and the Tubi. And although Tubi looks like they're going to be adding more and more sports, it would be easy for Tubi and or Pluto TV, if they wanted to add on a paid package option. If you want to go ahead and get Tubi on sports and get MLS games and Serie B, pay $5 a month and here you go. Or they could keep it on that ad-free supported platform. But yeah, it'll be an interesting one to watch, this one, to see what Fox does, because, I mean, they're probably not going to put Serie B games on FS1 or FS2. Maybe Fox Soccer Plus, maybe, but probably not. So maybe Tubi is the place for that. We'll have to wait and see on that. And Kyle, going from the highs of Serie B now to the highs of the Premier League, you've got some news about this weekend.
Yeah, the Saturday morning game, I should say, between Manchester United and Aston Villa is going to have Andres Cantor commentating a Premier League match, and it's going to be in English for the first time. He's going to be working with Robbie Earle, who's going to be on co-commentary, but this is a pretty big deal because Andres Cantor, I think everybody knows, in my opinion, were, you know, definitely one of the more known Spanish commentators. He's got such a recognizable voice, and, you know, his past work commentating World Cups, Copa Americas, everything in between. He's just the face, the voice you think of when you hear Spanish broadcasts. And he's been doing this in English, the Manchester United-Aston Villa game. That's going to be on Peacock at 7:30. But, yeah, really interesting, really big deal to have him on and be able to call a game for the Premier League and on Peacock, just because, like I said, he is such a recognizable voice in the industry.
Yeah, so moving on, there was a big announcement this week from CONCACAF, and that was the expansion of the CONCACAF Champions League, but also the expansion of the Leagues Cup, which is the tournament that takes place between Major League Soccer and Liga MX for Mexico. And nowadays, Leagues Cup, the way it's set up, is it doesn't involve every team, but they made a big announcement this week that Leagues Cup will be starting, I think, next year, I think it is, next summer. Both MLS and Liga MX will be taking off a month from their seasons and then having a World Cup-style tournament featuring all the teams from Liga MX and all the teams from Major League Soccer participating in what we would imagine would be a round-robin tournament to ultimately find the winner in that competition. Now, I guess in a way it sounds like this could be interesting. I see some benefits in it, in that it will be an interesting competition to watch. Kartik, what's your take on this one?
I'm super excited about it. Let's first off get out of the way, because if you don't say it, then people who I tend to agree with 99% of the time say I'm a subversive and a counter-revolutionary, etc. So, yes, this is a cash grab for Soccer United marketing. No question about it. But that doesn't mean I can't enjoy the tournament. Just because there may be sinister motives for creating the tournament, I think this is going to be fantastic. This could be the best club competition on the planet.
Wow. Wow, Kartik. So for me, Leagues Cup, for me...
And I could explain why I think it could be, but that's... we can get back to that in a minute.
Right. So Leagues Cup, to me, the way... what I translate it into is three words, and that is International Champions Cup. And what this is Liga MX and MLS saying, like, hey, every summer... it hasn't happened in a while due to COVID and... You mean, and Copa America and Euros and stuff like that. But every summer, here's all these teams from you know, Europe that come to the United States. And usually during the month of July and early August, they play these games. I mean, Real Madrid against Man United, still, I think, the record breaker for the most fans to watch a soccer game in the United States, over 100,000 people. I mean, all these people come in making a ton of money. For the most part, sold out stadiums, but it's in the last couple of years of the tournament. You mean definitely attendance has been lagging, but you mean what can Liga MX and MLS do to basically compete against that and push out International Champions Cup and say, hey guys, there's too much going on. There's not enough space for your, you mean Real Madrid's and AC Milan's and Barcelona's, etc. That's my take on this. It's purely a way to drive that business out. What about you, Kylie? Are you intrigued by the concept of the tournament?
Yeah, I'm always intrigued by, you know, more games. I think what Kartik said as a money grabs is probably true. Let's be honest here. But, you know, like he also added, I'm still going to watch it. It's still a competition that should be interesting. I think MLS and Liga MX, them working together is obviously beneficial for both, as they're both trying to grow their game, both in the States and worldwide. So having that international competition is going to be able to bring a lot of viewers. And I think a lot of people, you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong here, Chris, but is this going to include every team in MLS and Liga MX?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that just bringing in more teams and having them all have an opportunity to play these games that, you know, international games, you know, you're going to be going abroad. It's just a different kind of experience that a lot of these fans, especially for the newer MLS teams, I think is something that's going to be able to grow them pretty dramatically early on in their existence.
All right, Kartik, but probably in a future episode, maybe get more of your in-depth Leagues Cup expansion discussion or analysis. But let's move on to the next news item, because we have a lot to get to in the list of the mailbag. And the next news item is more of a question about the World Cup. I mean, it's been a hot topic last week and this week about FIFA's plans to go ahead and ask the question, you know, is there a need for having a World Cup every 2 years instead of every 4 years? And let me go ahead and actually just play a clip here. This is a clip from Fox Sports, and I think it would have been last week when they were doing one of the games, maybe one of the MLS games. And Alexi Lalas talks about his thoughts about the idea of playing a World Cup every 2 years, because he was invited to Doha to go ahead and share his, you know, to hear what was said. So let me play that clip right now.
The main purpose of the conference was to unveil a plan for the World Cup to be held every 2 years. So take us inside that room, if you're allowed.
Oh, absolutely. It was really interesting to be with those folks. It was also interesting to be in Qatar, where we will be next week for the World Cup. So far, so good. Really interesting country and culture. But when it comes to this, this was thinking about the future of the game, and maybe some dramatic changes in the future of the game. And the proposal from FIFA, when I say FIFA, headed up by Arsene Wenger, you know, less games, more competitive games, less travel, more rest, and then obviously the World Cup every couple of years. And I went in with an open mind, also recognizing that I'm being wined and dined, and keeping an open mind, like I said, because I recognize that this is a big thing and that there are multiple sides, and I want to make sure that I'm educated before I give, you know, any type of public statement as to whether this is right or wrong. And there are different sides. And there's a lot of, I'm not going to get into the weeds of it, but, you know, ultimately, when I think about this, I'm sitting on this stage with you guys, and I was in Doha because of what the World Cup did. I lived the power of a World Cup, and it changed my life forever. And so having a World Cup every couple of years, yes, there is the argument that it's going to lose some of its luster, lose some of its prestige. But in this fast-paced world, I'm not necessarily sure that's going to happen. And who am I to say that a player can't have that same experience? And more players now, because it's happening every couple of years. I haven't made up my mind, and it's a really interesting type of thing, and there's obviously a lot of reaction going on right now around the world, and there's going to continue to be talk about this, but I know how powerful the World Cup is, and I would never want to take that away from somebody else having that type of experience.
Well, I'll tell you.
Yeah, go. So it's interesting, too, because the way that Alexi Lalas is positioning this, and it's not just Alexi Lalas, but this is Fox. This is Fox's lead analyst. The way that they're positioning this is that, of course, let's take a look at it, and let's evaluate the options. Let's talk about it. Let's be kind of open-minded. Let's talk about this. For me, Kartik, Kyle, maybe too. If you disagree, let me know. But I think this is sort of a premeditated way of really pushing this, saying, okay, hey, here's the information. We're still thinking about it. We haven't made up our mind yet. We haven't said publicly how we feel about it. But, you know, at the end of the day, guaranteed behind closed doors, they're like, hey, let's make this thing happen. This is an opportunity to go ahead and have a World Cup every 2 years, make more money, get more rights to these games perhaps in the future. This is going to be a cash cow for FIFA. We're all in. But we're going to pad it. We're going to position it as in, we're listening, we're thinking about it, we're evaluating, we're open to ideas, which is exactly the same way that FIFA is doing it too, where they're saying like, hey, we want to hear from fans. If fans are interested in this or not, let us know. We're open to this. Am I being a cynic here, gentlemen, or or not?
Yeah, I think it's a foregone conclusion that FIFA is going to push this, and I think the knock-on effect is going to be pretty dramatic. You're going to see numbers of players who are at high level, who are high-level players in club football, probably opt out of the international game for periods of time because of the increased strain of qualifying of competitions every summer, because then presumably continental competitions will be in the summers in between. We've already dealt with that in North America because we have a Gold Cup every 2 years. Although, you know, oftentimes you see B teams called into Gold Cups for the top countries. We saw that in 2017 and in 2013. Those were basically B Gold Cups for at least the top six or eight CONCACAF sides. So I think it's a foregone conclusion. I also think it's going to have terrible ramifications for club football and effectively really put a premium on player decisions and players maybe opting out of international competition and evaluating their health and when they want to play and when they don't want to play. Because keep in mind, while the international game might be more lucrative from a media perspective, media rights perspective, and FIFA making money, it is less lucrative from a player and agent perspective. And when those two pressures come up against each other, something is going to crack.
All right, Kyle, tell us we're wrong on this one.
I don't know if I can say that you're wrong. I think Kartik's right. It's a foregone conclusion that FIFA is going to be pushing for this. And, you know, the media rights holders, they're not going to say no. Sure, it'll be an expensive bid. But, I mean, people are still going to watch. They'll say they'll be against the World Cup every 2 years. I'm one of them. I think that it waters down the significance of the tournament. It puts a strain on players. And like Kartik says, it's going to make player decisions to forego international duty. I think that, you know, but the media rights holders, they're not going to say no. People are still going to watch, and they're going to pay money because they know that fans, despite, you know, saying that I'm not going to watch this, they're still going to watch. People are going to want to watch Spain play Brazil because it's a marquee game. It features marquee players. Even if, you know, the one or two stars for those teams aren't there, it's still a good game. And I think it's a shame that FIFA is pushing for this. I know that there are some supporters, and obviously there are those are a lot of people against. It's just, I think it'll be interesting to see how FIFA, not only FIFA, but also the media rights holders push it, because, you know, Fox, they, like you said, Chris, they are kind of like, yeah, we're going to give it a look. We're going to see what it's like. But behind closed doors, that, you know, they're already saying, we want this. We want this bad, because it's just so much money involved with the World Cup. And every 2 years, you know, it might be less money per World Cup, but I think the grand total is just going to skyrocket in that regard.
Yeah, to me, it's a premeditated propaganda PR campaign by FIFA. And I think it was Stu Holden on Twitter a couple of weeks ago was like, hey, let's talk about this. Let's be open-minded about this. Let's listen to what FIFA has to say. And all at the same time, I mean, Stu Holden is head of the U.S. Athletes Council. I mean, is definitely, I mean, works for Fox. I mean, and that's the thing, though, too, is that if it was a World Cup every 2 years, Fox probably feels it has a good opportunity to actually get the rights to that tournament, because, you mean, it's paid, I mean, FIFA over $1 billion in TV revenue to get all these World Cups from the 18 to the 2022 to the 2026. And, I mean, a World Cup every 2 years should be, if the U.S. qualifies, should be a cash machine for Fox, for U.S. soccer, for FIFA especially. At the end of the day, to me, this is FIFA driving this. This is FIFA saying, like, hey, what can we do to increase the amount of money that we can generate for the organization? Because we've lost a lot of money in the last several years, losing big-time sponsorship deals with Coca-Cola and some big brands. What can we do? And this is their answer. This is the answer to say, okay, hey, World Cup every 2 years, that's going to help us big time on the revenue side. And then everything beneath that falls in line. Fox says, yeah, this make it happen. CONCACAF says, yeah, this make it happen. And then ultimately, I mean, in the next few weeks, I mean, you will have a Lalas or a Stu Holden, and they'll probably come out publicly and say, hey, yes, yeah, yeah, we support this. This makes a lot of sense for us because of these reasons. Even though it's ultimately FIFA is the one that's really, really using these people as puppets, really. I mean, that's my take on it. Let's move on to listener mailbag. We've got a lot to get to. Nick is up first. Nick says, thanks as always for doing the pod. It's a must listen every week. I understand why the Premier League is able to outdo the major European leagues in international broadcast deals due to production value, brand value, English as an international language, etc. But why is the Premier League domestic TV deal so much larger than its European counterparts? Spain and Italy can be explained by smaller populations and lower household income. France has always lagged behind the others in club football popularity. But Germany, for example, really makes no sense to me. Germany's population is 25% larger than the UK's and has a higher household income. It is equally, if not more, soccer mad, if anything, has fewer mainstream sports competing for attention, and doesn't have a blackout window keeping 30% of games off air. Yet, despite all of this, the Premier League's domestic TV deal is worth over 50% more than what the Bundesliga gets. Presumably, the values are directly related to how much revenue broadcasters believe will be generated by holding the rights. So how is it that, despite all of these factors, Sky UK is willing to pay 50% more than Sky Deutschland? It seems to me that either the Premier League rights are overvalued in the UK, or domestic rights are undervalued on the continent. What am I missing? And Nick, great feedback, right? I was just saying great feedback by Nick. Some really, really good questions there, Kartik.
Yeah, so let me jump in on this. First off, I agree historically the domestic TV rights package for the Premier League has been overvalued. However, the Premier League was founded with the goal by David Dean and Lord Sugar in particular. Those were the two real driving forces on the TV side of maximizing TV rights deals. Originally, they had gone to ITV when they had talked about the breakaway league, and then Sky was willing to pay more because Sky wanted to get in households, they wanted to get in bars, they wanted people buying their satellite system. So it kind of built from there. Now, what I would say has happened recently is we're seeing domestic rights in the UK for the Premier League beginning to top off, which is why I think Amazon has entered the picture, because the Premier League is seeing Sky UK, Sky B, and VT. Now it's BT, right? At one time it was Satanta with that other rights deal, are not willing to pay anything more. The growth in popularity of the Premier League is not growing the way it did exponentially in terms of television ad dollars, et cetera, new signups for Sky satellite systems, et cetera, as it did before. Versus, I think in Germany, you're beginning to see the rights escalate. DAZN came in this last domestic rights cycle and paid a lot more than anyone expected and more than Sky Deutschland has traditionally paid. So I think you're going to see that Germany number start to climb and be comparable to England in time in terms of domestic rights deals for their leagues. Now, you make great points about France. France, football is not the most popular sport. It's not the top sport in the country. Italy and Spain, household income is lower. And there are actually also, I think, other recreational interests in those countries. They're not as football mad. As successful as they've been and as great as much as well as their top clubs are supported in Spain and Italy and in France to a lesser extent, those three countries are not as football mad as England and Germany. So England and Germany are good comparisons. You make some great points, Nick, but I think it's going to even out in the next 10 years would be my prediction. And I think we already saw in the last negotiation for this current three-year rights cycle deal in the UK, the beginning of that number of that rights, the values of those rights domestically stagnating, while the recently completed deal in Germany saw an escalation in value. So I think they're going to meet each other at some point.
So Chris says, when it comes to NBC's future with the Premier League, I agree with Chris's analysis that the TV and streaming sides are at odds with each other over how to proceed in terms of bidding. This infighting was one of the main reasons why NBC lost the NHL to both ESPN and Turner, because NBC could not decide on the amount of games they wanted to put on linear TV and streaming. If NBC loses the Premier League, in my view, then they need to go after the rights to Major League Soccer, because if they don't, they will end up in the same position as Fox, as when it comes to soccer with the Spanish rights to the World Cup, the Olympics, and Liga MX via Chivas, but that's it. Michael says, great podcast. Thanks for the insights. Haven't thought about HBO Max with a possibility to air matches on TNT or TBS owned by Warner Media. It seems with the continual transition of linear to streaming, so many of the EPL audience has been caught in the middle. I know the general US soccer audience is going to streaming, but NBC built their EPL fan base on linear cable over the years. If this was 5 years from now, the decision for EPL to go all in on a streaming solution in the US would be an easy one. This will be a very interesting decision by the Premier League, and maybe the driving force will be the highest bid coupled with the growth of streaming and not initially losing audience from traditional cable subscribers as streaming continues to mature and grow. JP says, it seems like if you two were handicapping this decision about the Premier League, it's ESPN or CBS in the lead. If an Amazon type doesn't swoop in, the fact is, at this point, it does not bode well for NBC Sports. As you mentioned, if they're struggling with the current contract to profit and drive Peacock subscriptions, then they could very well put in a token bid they know won't win and walk away. That is what they did with the NHL. Everyone speculated it meant that they're all in on the Premier League, but maybe just the start of their non-NFL retreat from live sports. If that's true, I actually can see the justification. Sports rights fees are spiraling out of control. At some point, it's not worth it. If there's not a critical mass of viewers like the NFL and big-time college football. If EPL still wants that air of exclusivity, they might be better off with CBS over ESPN, provided the bids are in the same range. Shared with Serie A, but no one, not even a Serie A fan like myself, would see it as a threat to peel off EPL viewers in the short or long run. In addition, if the Premier League compares what CBS has done with studio coverage for their properties versus ESPN, they know CBS will provide an excellent product that will make the Premier League feel important. Plus, CBS Sports Network has more room to simulcast matches than ESPN does. Kartik, that's an interesting discussion too, because if CBS gets the Premier League, what happens to Serie A? If ESPN gets the Premier League, what happens to La Liga?
Yeah, I think with ESPN, we've seen each subsequent property has gotten more attention. So I mentioned earlier in the show, Serie A fans were complaining a year ago at this time, much like Bundesliga fans are complaining now, that all of a sudden ESPN, Bundesliga is a shiny new toy. They don't care about Serie A. Now we see that with La Liga versus the Bundesliga. And that's what will happen. Inevitably, the Premier League comes in. Now with CBS, it's particularly for those Sunday kickoffs that would be pushed to CBS Sports Network, with CBS Network Television being completely NFL driven on Sundays in fall, and then college basketball and golf Sundays throughout much of the rest of the year. You would see that being CBS Sports Network. Well, CBS Sports Network then is going to conflict directly with Serie A and the magazine program we talked about earlier in the show that they're showing actually at 11:30 on Sunday, when you have a Premier League usually kicking off its biggest match of the weekend. So that's a potential issue there. I do think Premier League fans who complained about Peacock need to get used to the idea that more and more of this is going to be on streaming. Although, however, let me point this out really quickly, Chris. 3 years ago or 2 years ago, whenever the Peacock thing started, or when NBC Sports Gold started, I should say, and then Peacock, we would get a lot of listener mailbag complaints about all of these matches going to streaming, not having the Premier League extra time, right? That whole setup match on DirecTV and on Comcast anymore. Now I think the complaints – now Premier League fans are used to streaming. The complaints are that Peacock doesn't show every match, that you buy a streaming service service, and yet you still don't know if the game's going to be on NBCSN, if it's going to be on USA, if it's going to be on CNBC, if it's going to be NBC over the air. So I don't think there's as much of an aversion to streaming as maybe we had thought a year or two ago. Now the problem is if you're mixing and matching and you're putting things in different places, and you don't even know when games will be on demand. So Peacock matches are available on demand immediately on Peacock after full time. Matches that are shown on a broadcast network are not available for 24 hours after the conclusion of the match on Peacock. And that's causing more confusion than anything, quite honestly, these first 5 weeks of the season.
So Kyle, you're a big college football fan as well as a big soccer fan. If you had to pick your preference for the U.S. Television network that you feel is your favorite? I mean, whether it's ABC, CBS, Fox, or forgetting one. What's NBC? NBC, ABC, CBS, or Fox? I mean, do you have a favorite among those four for kind of overall sports coverage?
I would say for overall sports coverage, it's hard to say. See, I'm a Florida fan, as you mentioned, a Florida Gators football fan. So a lot of their marquee games are on CBS. For example, the Alabama game I was at was on CBS. And I think if you had asked me this a couple of years ago, maybe even a year ago at this rate, I probably would have said NBC. I'm a big hockey fan as well. So the hockey combined with the Premier League combined with the likes of the Olympics, it was really just they had all the sports that I was interested in. But now we see these rights going elsewhere, the NHL flipping over to Turner. If I had to say one, I think honestly I would say ABC. They have, in my opinion, a good variety, and I say that with air quotes, but I mean they have football, which I'm a fan of. They have some baseball sometimes. I think they'll be getting some hockey in the coming years. And I know that if the Premier League were to go over to ESPN, they would put some games on ABC, just like ESPN did put La Liga games on, you know, their linear networks, or I should say ESPN, at the beginning of this season. So I think that one right now, ABC is probably my favorite, and especially if ESPN can get their hands on the Premier League rights, then it'll only bolster that position.
Yeah, it just goes to show how much of a big deal this TV rights deal that's currently being bid on is. I mean, if ABC and ESPN got that, I mean, that would be transformative, even bigger than what they already are bigger, right? It's just that they would be taking over, vice versa for any of these networks. This is a massive, massive deal. Moving on, Christopher says, I think it's simple for the Premier League. Stay with NBC and stream on Peacock. To me, it would seem stability is important, and keeping your product on a channel that you have been on for some years is positive, because everybody now knows if you want to watch the Premier League, get Peacock and watch on NBC or USA. It's promised to be shown on a cable channel and streamed. And as we see, La Liga is not getting much exposure beyond ESPN Plus, not compared to the Premier League. And there's definitely, I mean, going back to kind of that first segment we talked about kind of the poor timing, unfortunate timing of ESPN and La Liga. At the end of the day, the games I've watched from La Liga this season hasn't been that interesting. It's, I mean, the level of soccer is not that good for the most part. I mean, there's been some blowouts. But it's not, I think, a league that's coming up in just general conversation among soccer fans right now. There's not, I mean, yes, as far as Barcelona's just kind of fall from grace, but I don't know. It's just not the sexiest of leagues.
But you don't have – so I think this is the problem with La Liga. You haven't had – in fact, I had a colleague of mine who's a soccer guy. I'm working on a soccer project with him the other day, asked me about beIN Sports and thought that they were like 11 sports. And I told him La Liga had been on beIN Sports the last 8 seasons. And he's like, well, I guess it's because I don't watch La Liga because it's not interesting and the same teams win it every year. Yet that same person would argue with – would tell me, hey, Serie A – is more interesting because we've seen AC Milan fall to 8th place in the league. We're seeing Juventus. They came back yesterday, but it looked like they were going to be stuck in the drop zone after 5 fixtures. So what's happened in La Liga is you've never had Real Madrid or Barcelona fall out of the top three in this era. So that gives soccer fans who are Premier League driven, admittedly, English language dominant Premier League fans, this sort of reason to just dismiss La Liga and say, hey, it's not interesting. So it would actually be really good if Sevilla won the league this year somehow, and I think that would help make La Liga more compelling to the average fan. Because I have people tell me that even when I say, "Hey, Juventus won Serie A every year for eight straight years," those same people come back at me and say, "Yeah, but Milan fell to eighth, Inter fell to sixth. We saw Roma finish second. We saw Napoli finish second. We see Atalanta on the top four quite often. We saw Udinese push at one point. Spain hasn't had that. Now, I actually believe Spain, top to bottom, was the best league in the world as recently as 2 or 3 years ago. Premier League fans don't want to admit that. But these things, you have to convince people in 30 seconds to a minute as to why Spain is more interesting and the football is more interesting, and you just can't do it. So that's, I think, a problem for ESPN.
I think it's a bigger problem than that, though, Kartik. I think even if, I mean, Lille won the Ligue 1 last season, but I don't think we've seen an increase in number of people watching Ligue 1 this season. Well, maybe
true.
Because of
Monaco won it recently also, which people forget.
And La Liga, I mean, you look at La Liga as a product, and you watch the games, the coverage is good, the production value is great. There are some really interesting stories as far as the teams. I mean, whether it's Athletic being in the Basque region, in Barcelona, in the Catalan region, and there's different regional differences that are interesting. But there's no Americans playing in the league. I just don't get the sense that there's a lot of people talking about La Liga. When it's Barcelona and Real Madrid winning everything, the super teams playing, two of the best teams in the world at that time when they were on top with Messi and Ronaldo, I think people were talking about it much more then than they are now. And even if Sevilla win the title, I just don't get the sense that it's going to make much of a difference when you have the Premier League basically monopolizing almost everything. It seems to be it from a world soccer perspective.
So Kyle can really appreciate this analogy. To me, the Premier League, and I've said this for years on the show, but Kyle hasn't been on the show previously, or at least with me at the same time. The Premier League is the SEC, and the way it markets itself, the way that it has convinced fans that it is the SEC in college football, not in college basketball. That would be the ACC in college basketball more than any other league. But the way the SEC has convinced fans that it's the A-grade product. So I think wherever the Premier League is, soccer fans will go. Just like I think for college football purposes, CBS losing the SEC is pretty devastating for them, for their brand in that sport in particular, and those fans are going to gravitate to ESPN and ABC now. ESPN's had SEC games also, but the top game has been on CBS now since 1996, 25 years. So I think it's very similar with the fans in the U.S. They always identified the Premier League as that A-grade product because it was marketed better than the other leagues. Now, I would argue it wasn't the best league in the world, whereas the SEC has been the best college football conference since the late 90s. But now it is the best league in the world, and it's got the marketing might. So really tough times for other leagues, and I think the promise of ESPN and what ESPN can do to market you in the U.S. really forced La Liga to make this change. But unfortunately, it just may not pay off the way they had hoped. It is an 8-year deal, rather 9-year deal. So maybe things change in a couple seasons. But I think for a while, we're going to be having this conversation where the Premier League is in the ascendancy and La Liga is not really relevant to as many soccer fans in this country as maybe it should be, or maybe we would hope it would be.
So, Kyle, is there any train that can stop the Premier League, monopolization in terms of, it's the league that most people talk about in the U.S.?
Yeah, I don't think there's any stopping that train right now. I think the SEC to the Premier League analogy is perfect because, once the SEC got rolling, they were like, all right, we have the power. We're just going to build on it. And I think right now they have a stranglehold on the rest of college football despite, the Big Ten making a push. And now there's like some allegiance forming between the teams outside of the SEC, whatever. But and then the Premier League, the teams that are in the Premier League know that they have the power because – the top six, You know, even though you could throw Arsenal in that mix, I think they still have a lot of power in terms of media and broadcasting, but maybe they might not be the best on the field. I think those top six still have control, and I think that there's no stopping them and stopping the Premier League from taking the reins the same way the SEC did in terms of, you know, total European control or domination in terms of broadcasting rights.
All right. Let's move on. Two more comments to go. Jason says, in addition to streaming services, soccer growth can be contributed to YouTube channels as well. CBS and NBC provide great highlights package of games. You can get highlights from smaller leagues, teams in nations such as England and Scotland. Also, the talk and commentary side has grown the most, centering around the U.S. men's national team. And I'd agree there. I mean, most when I talk about streaming services, YouTube's one that we often kind of don't even mention. We don't even think of it as being in the same category. I probably watch more YouTube than I do ESPN Plus or Disney Plus or Paramount Plus or whatever. Just for pure entertainment, it's just, I mean, a lot of YouTube channels and, I mean, that I watch and I enjoy and it's targeted to me. Like, whatever I watch, they make recommendations based on that. And we don't get that as much with ESPN Plus. Yes, ESPN Plus should know by now that, I mean, the three of us and listeners are mad soccer fans. We love to watch these types of games, this team, this league, whatever it may be. And in the suggestions, it seems to be, it's still a bunch of stuff. I'm like, I have no interest in this at all.
Yeah, Jason makes a great point, because I think there's a subculture around USMNT in particular that's grown up on YouTube, which is really interesting. A lot of the discussions that were previously on Twitter or on other social media platforms have now, about the national team specifically, not about soccer in general — Twitter is still the king for soccer in general — but soccer conversations have gravitated to YouTube about the U.S. men's national team. So that's a great point, Jason, and I've noticed that in the last 6 to 9 months that there's been a gravitation of people, national team focused people, to YouTube, which is maybe a trend for all of soccer, or maybe it's just exclusive to U.S. soccer.
Yeah, speaking of YouTube, we're actually, World Soccer Talk is getting ready in the next week or two to debut a new video interview series that's going to be hosted by Kyle. Kyle, do you want to just give it like kind of a brief glimpse into what the concept of the show is and who the first guest may be?
Yeah, for sure. So the concept we have is kind of like a show and tell, everybody's favorite thing from grade school. So we're going to have on members of the soccer media, maybe former players or people involved in the realm of soccer. And we're going to have them show one or two things that they find unique. And that could be anything from a jersey that they have that was given to them, or, you know, a boot that, you know, means something to them. And then Chris and I were talking about possible things. I know Chris showed me a trading card signed by Neymar. It's things that not everybody would know or think of in terms of soccer, but they are in that regard unique. And it's a really interesting thing. We already had one guest on. He works for ESPN. He's a really great guy. We sat down and talked for 45 minutes, and he showed me a handful of items that he has collected over his career, or things that he's worked on over his career. And it's just it's a really good way to find out more about people. And I think, kind of building off of what Chris and Kartik said, is YouTube, I think it's my friends and I talk about which social media we think is the most important, and I always say, if you count YouTube, it has to be YouTube, because YouTube's kind of in a little gray area. You know, there's still a social media. Anyone can post to YouTube and anyone can comment or do anything on YouTube. But now you see NBC puts their entire highlight reels on YouTube. I know the Russian Premier League, they broadcast all of their games on YouTube. We've seen other entire games on YouTube, and I think YouTube TV just builds on that. But it also grows audiences, because we see the likes of the England national team. They post just training videos for like 15 minutes that allow fans to see the inside and kind of get to know the players. And we see the U.S., they post like entire compilations of their trips to, say, Honduras, where they show, you know, Greg Berhalter or the players in the locker room just talking, and it allows the players to kind of see more about what's going on and, you know, tie it all together. I think the upcoming thing we have for World Soccer Talk, that's kind of like a show and talk series, is a good way for you as an audience to get to know members of the soccer media more than you would just by watching them on your TV screen.
Yeah, and for me, like my personal club, you know, I follow their YouTube channel or subscribe to their YouTube channel, and because of that, I'm able to watch U23 highlights. I'm able to watch the press conferences, and that's just one tiny little iota of all the different types of content that YouTube has. And yeah, like you mentioned, Kyle, a lot of games on there from the Russian Premier League, as well as DAZN recently doing the deal for the UEFA Women's Champions League competition, where the games will be available through there for free. So that's one to look out for as potential additional rights acquisition in the future. Having said that, though, I think Google is very focused on the bottom line. I mean, they make tons of money, but they don't seem to be kind of the type of company that goes out and spends $2 billion on rights to the Premier League. Although, I mean, it would be a game changer for sure. Last up is Dave. Dave says, this is in reference to a long-running complaint from many of your listeners regarding the decision from some broadcasters like ESPN Plus, for example, to not air games from smaller teams or leagues unless their people can call it. While on the one hand, I get it because they want to only air matches that look top-notch. But on the other, do they not have any interns who will need and want the experience? I'm sure only the soccer nerds who will want to watch the majority of these second division games. But it'll be helpful. It'll help us feel a little less cheated because right now we're not getting every match like they were advertising. Throw those kids a few hundred bucks. They'll probably suck, but at least we can watch those games. And this is something I followed up with ESPN. So I think a few weeks ago, talking about the second division of the Bundesliga and why is there fewer games available this season compared to last? I didn't get a lot of information from them, but I did get some feedback, which is that they never promised that they were going to show every game. They didn't specify how many games they were going to show, and they did. They are showing some games. So I think last weekend there was one game. I haven't looked at this weekend's schedule, but maybe there's one game. But I think Dave's point about maybe it's not interns, but there's certainly a lot of talent at ESPN. I don't know, Kartik, what do you think? Should
Chris,
they go
this
for
is
it?
An interesting. This is really interesting because I've been working on a project. As many of the things I do, as our listeners know, related to lower divisions in the United States, and been talking to people, and there is a growing sentiment among lower division fans, and by lower division I mean USL and lower, NISA, NPSL, UPSL, etc., that maybe they should stream games without the commentators, because a lot of commentators are either too raw because then they're being assigned to these lower division games, or they know nothing about the teams involved because they're lower division teams or have some sort of contempt for it. So that's actually kind of a growing sentiment in the U.S. fan culture at the lower division level. Just show us the stream. We just want to see the match. We don't need a commentator who's maybe an MLS snob or a Premier League snob commenting on a NISA match. I wonder if that approach could be taken with lower divisions. Now that we're talking about Bundesliga 2, obviously, and the Segunda both being on ESPN and Serie B being on Fox, if maybe in some cases when you don't have commentators, it's okay because the people who are watching those matches tend to be really educated about their clubs anyway. It's not like the casual audience you get for top division games, whether it's MLS or Premier League or Bundesliga 1, etc.
I think it's okay to have the game stream without commentators for, you mean like a second division Italian game or a second division German game? Because if you do have somebody that's, say, relatively a novice to, say, the second division of the Bundesliga, chances are they're not going to get the pronunciation of the names correctly, and especially the second division, the German Bundesliga. I mean, there's going to be a whole host of different names, and it's a struggle. It's a struggle for us. I mean, we love and breathe the game, but pronunciations are key. And you can imagine, too, that I mean, if there was a commentator that made a big mistake about a pronunciation, they'd get grilled. They'd get even flamed over in social media. So, but I think it's okay. I mean, to me, I would like, I mean, if it's the second division team or league, I'd be okay with the sounds, you mean the crowd noise and watching the games. It's not going to be that as entertaining for the neutral. What do you think, Kyle?
I think this reminds me of when the game started back up after the pandemic stoppage, and when there was no crowd noise and you could hear the players in the field, there was like occasional moments where NBC's Premier League commentators wouldn't be talking or there were just technical difficulties. And I honestly kind of prefer it that way. I think NBC has great commentators and they provide good analysis. But there's just a different style of enjoyment when you can hear the players communicate. You can hear them screaming, and then you can also say that when fans are involved, they add something to the game. And I like watching games that don't have commentators. So if you are watching these lower league games, say in the Bundesliga 2 or Segunda Division in Spain, I think that just having the game play out and then listening to the crowd, it just makes you feel more like you're there. And that, I mean, it's all kinds of things that are going to impact whether or not you feel like you're there, your level of enjoyment. But I think that there's certain logistical issues that broadcasters have to overcome in terms of broadcasting games. But I agree. I think that if you just throw out the game without commentary, just listen to the fans, listen to the players if necessary, I think that is an enjoyable way to experience a game.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's I appreciate being able to hear sometimes the coaches, what the coaches are saying. So during that pandemic, when we did have, I mean, the Bundesliga as one example, where they decided to have the natural sounds coming out of the stadium, which was no sounds other than the players talking and the coaches, I thought that was really, really illuminating. That's something that I've always wanted to do. I mean, I've always wanted to be, I mean, I've gone to soccer stadiums around the world, gone to Europe and North America and you name it. But I've always wanted to be able to sit behind the bench and hear, I mean, Jose Mourinho or, I mean, Jurgen Klopp or whoever it is, and just hear what they're saying. Because I might be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're so foul-mouthed or whatever they say. But I want to hear what they're saying.
That they run is if you don't use any crowd noise and you don't use any commentary, then obviously the players on the field and the coaches aren't going to hold back in terms of what they say.
If you're a Minnesota fan, I would urge you to do that for a match with Adrian Heath. I sat behind him at a Orlando City match when they were in USL, and it was 90 minutes of just pure excitement, pure joy. You don't need any commentary for sit to hear Inchi for 90 minutes. So if you're a Minnesota fan, do that.
I thought you were going to say like 90 minutes of pure just expletives.
Well, that it was, but I enjoyed it personally.
I think actually MLS is back. That was really good about MLS is back, being able to hear the coaches. And that's probably the best example of being able to hear the coaches up close. And I think oftentimes when it was Adrian Heath and Minnesota United, a lot of kind of just like beep, 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 beep. You couldn't, they were able to catch with a 7-second delay, able to catch the swear words and beep them out. All right, listeners, we want you to have your say. This has been a long episode, but it's been a really good episode with both Kyle and Kartik and your insights and your observations and questions for us, which have been really, really spot on, really good stuff. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on the podcast thread on worldsoccertalk.com. And heading into another weekend of football from around the world, we've got a lot to look forward to, no matter what league or what team or what country you support. But heading into that weekend, Kartik, what are you going to do, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.